Hey there, I'm Pete Townsend, and this is Money Never Sleeps. We look inside the minds of entrepreneurs and at the crossover of startups, enterprise, finance, technology, and life as we know it. Laura Walsh joins the show again this week as guest co-host as we dive into the intersection of digital identity and decentralized social media. Laura is the chief marketing officer and part of the founding team of Cascade Finance. We worked together closely for the past 2 years on the Techstars Web3 Accelerator. Laura is a Techstars All-Star mentor, advisor, founder, Web3 OG, and friend. I'll link all of Laura's details in the show notes on moneyneversleeps.ie so you can get in touch with her. In this episode, Laura helps me to unpack a developing thesis of mine on a potential link between digital identity and decentralized social media. We look at this through the lens of Farcaster, a decentralized protocol designed specifically for building and connecting social apps as it allows users to create public social profiles and communities to interact with others. Armed with some learnings on digital identity from my recent conversation with Mai Santamaria on episode 247, I was struck by the opportunity to enable decentralized digital identity through something like Farcaster. But only if user growth spurred a massive diversity of apps built on the Farcaster protocol, and not just social media apps. I've engaged with a number of early-stage founders recently on the concept of a decentralized WeChat, which has its roots as a social media app in China, but is now well advanced down the path of becoming a single one-stop shop for every conceivable digital need, including content, payments, commerce, and access to public services. Laura brings in a whole slew of insights from her experience living in Asian markets and helps me to pinpoint whether an opportunity exists or not. All right here on Money Never Sleeps. Welcome back to the show, Laura Walsh.
Well, it's been a while. But I'm happy to be back.
It has been. You've been working on something new, haven't you?
I have since November, surprisingly enough.
Tell me about Cascade Finance.
Sure. So we've kind of been in stealth, and it's a DeFi platform. So it's a liquidity bootstrapping and incentivization layer. At the core, you would say it's a B2B play. It's more of a B2B business because we're working with protocols and platforms to overcome liquidity problems like the cold start problem, liquidity fractionalization. But actually, we're going into liquidity concentration now and building a narrative around how, while everyone's really quite keen on really large liquidity pools, it's not as good as you think. Liquidity needs to flow. So let's get it flowing and direct that into more, let's say, better or optimized pools for LPs and for traders and protocols.
Okay. That is interesting. And the words that went code red right in my face when you said them were cold start problem.
Yep.
Because I picked up the Andrew Chen book and started reading that.
Ooh, interesting.
Which is called the cold start problem.
Yep.
I only got about probably 25% of the way through before my wife said to me, Pete, you just got to go back to fiction for a little while, because if this is making you think about things late at night that you want to do with your portfolio companies, that's not good.
So no.
I've gone back to Neal Stephenson and reading The Confusion, which is part of the Baroque cycle of historical fiction that he wrote. And it's interesting. They're talking about crypto in the 1600s. So, you know, it's good, but.
Oh, that's interesting.
The cold start problem is very real in terms of those that are coming to market in order to help increase liquidity, right?
Yes.
So helping to increase liquidity is just, in fact, helping to address the cold start problem of others. So
exactly.
I get it. I think it's well.
Flywheels inside of flywheels, and it's a positive sum economics flywheel and a habit loop. So.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. Awesome. Well, listen, excited that you're working on that and can't wait to hear more about it as things progress with that. So speaking of cold start problems, any new social media proposition has a cold start problem, right? How do you actually get users? You need users to bring you users. You need users to bring those interested in those users' eyeballs, and that interest in those eyeballs will bring money. In terms of advertising. And obviously, the traditional social media channels have gone through this over the last 15, 20 years now. And there's a new ripple that's made its way through. It's called Farcaster. And it is Farcaster is a blockchain powered decentralized social media protocol. And me digging into this got me thinking that about this digital identity conversation that I had with Mai Santa Maria on episode 247. I wanted to look at the intersection of digital identity with decentralized social media, that some people may think, what does that have to do with anything? And I think there's a link there. And it's this other side of government issued digital identity that I wanted to dig into a bit. And given that there's been so much buzz around Farcaster, I wanted to kind of use that as a lens to look at this. And so I thought, what better person to talk about this than Laura Walsh, right? Because of just how active you are on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Your life.
I am terminally online. Hands up, I admit, I confess, I am terminally online. Please, I would beg people, don't go to my profile, or do. It's fine, but I'm opinionated and I have very strong opinions about things, but it doesn't affect my work stuff. But yeah, I am terminally online. I absolutely am terminally online.
These views are my own.
These views are absolutely my own. They do not reflect on my employer or any company that I may mentor or be an investor in at all.
Absolutely.
But they're absolutely mine.
Absolutely. And speaking of mentoring, congratulations on being named an all-star mentor for Techstars.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's like, I never win anything. This is awesome.
Yep. No, it was totally justified based upon everything that you've done with us over the last couple of years, Laura. So thank you. On social media, as you know, the warning shot with social media always is, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product, right? Mm-hmm. And that the things that you express online, there are eyeballs that want to see that. And like we said, the eyeballs will bring money. With Farcaster, which is actually not really the social media channel, mm-hmm. it's the X or Twitter-like app that's built on top of Farcaster, which is called Warpcast. You do pay for an account, but it's kind of nothing, right? It's a whopping $5. And they say that it's to minimize spam accounts. But Farcaster returns the control to the user and lets you transfer your followers from app to app that are built on the Farcaster protocol. And that's the operative phrase there. Mm-hmm. Apps that are built on the Farcaster protocol. Okay. And Warpcast is pretty similar to Twitter. But there's a frames feature that's new that's generated a lot more buzz over the last month or so that lets you embed games, NFT minting, instant checkout, all within the confines of a single cast, as it's called, which would be equivalent mm-hmm. to a tweet. And I'll put a link into the show notes. Cami Russo from Defiant described it briefly, and I'll drop that in. So Dan Romero, who's a Farcaster co-founder, former Coinbase, he described frames as a, quote, total canvas for developers to do a ton more than just polls. You can do polls on Twitter, and that's pretty much it. So you can do tarot card reading, you can play chess, you can mint NFTs, you can control access to token gated content, you can buy Girl Scout cookies, and you can check out and pay with crypto, all within the confines of a single cast. Now, the whole idea is to start a flywheel, and that, again, that word got me right away when I saw that. Of developers building apps, the apps attract users, the users attract more developers who build more apps, and it goes around and around. But it's all very technical. Like when I got into this, I'm like, okay, where's my thing to go play with frames?
Yeah.
And you can't really. You need to be a developer to do that. And I think that's kind of the point, right? Is that you want to bring developers onto the protocol. You don't want to just bring tons of people that are like, oh, I'm sick of Twitter. I want to go do something else. Right? So.
Yes and no. Yes and no.
I'm saying
you need both, but you're missing a huge opportunity with people who want to exodus from Twitter.
Oh, totally.
Which people have tried, obviously. Threads has tried, Blue Sky has tried. I mean, this reminds me, to be honest, about Clubhouse, if you remember Clubhouse, and how everyone just was dying to get into Clubhouse. And then it had this big boom for like maybe a month, two, and then
it's gone. Exactly. It's gone. And it's gone. You know, I remember everybody when Threads went live in the US and seeing everyone saying, oh, here's my Threads username. Here's my Threads account. And it's like, well, I couldn't get it on anyway because I'm in Europe. So, you know, I totally missed that.
I didn't join it because I read the terms and they're like, yeah, you can't get rid of it. You can't delete it. And you have to connect your Instagram with it. And you have to connect your Facebook. And I was like, no.
Oh, reminds me of
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. So, I mean, we're going to get into this conversation a bit more where I don't know if I want all of those personas across every app I use. I mean, part of the freedom of being on social media sometimes is to be anonymous and to be able to express yourself freely. That, you know, obviously has a double-edged sword there because it also makes people be absolute horrible, you know, cave-dwelling trolls sometimes and saying horrible things. But that goes with anonymity and freedom of speech. It's a whole other level. But I mean, Warpcast right now and Forecast right now seems to me a bit like a centralized, decentralized.
Mm.
It's kind of a hybrid because everything is within this Forecaster ecosystem. So you can't kind of, you can't take it anywhere because there's nowhere to go. Chicken and the egg. So we're cart before the horse a little bit. And I agree that you need devs there to build more of an ecosystem. Because right now I just got in because, you know, the absolute rigmarole I had to just get an account. And the whole thing about getting an account is to connect it to your wallet. That always rings bells with me mm-hmm. from a security standpoint, because unless I have to, I don't want to connect my wallet. Unless I'm going to do some sort of transaction, I don't want to connect my wallet to create an account. And what I just found was I paid $5 through Apple Pay.
Yeah.
Nothing. My wallet didn't connect anywhere. I have no wallet connection to this.
Well,
so the new way to onboard people, which I thought was really smart, but there's also no explainer. Like maybe I sound like a noob, but this is who you're trying to bring in and they're going to come in and nope out because it's too hard.
Yeah. Well, I got on very easily. So I think, like you said, there were notifications going out once you got onto Warpcast that they had some trouble with user account setup yesterday or something to that effect. And it's like, well,
yes,
put it on Twitter.
Put it on Warpcast.
Don't put it on Warpcast.
Even put it on your website, disseminate it on Reddit. I couldn't find it on Reddit. When you can't find something on Reddit, that's wild.
Yeah, absolutely. So Warpcast is just the go-to-market strategy for Forecaster, like as we're saying. So give people something they recognize, let them go a few steps further with frames, right? And that you can take your identity with you across any app built on the Forecaster protocol. How it works, and I listened to Dan Romero on a podcast last week talking about this, is that users don't care whether it's decentralized or not.
No,
there needs to be something for users to get as an experience that's more valuable to them than just using Twitter, okay? So the way it actually works, though, is that Forecaster uses the Ethereum blockchain to manage a decentralized registry of user identity. So you're not actually setting up on Forecaster the protocol, you know, and not Warpcast the app. It's that when you set up an account on Forecaster, you create or you mint a Forecaster ID, and that FID is kind of your transversal ID across the entire Forecaster ecosystem, which is very small right now, other than Warpcast. Mm-hmm. So the Forecaster ID is linked to the Forecaster contract using your existing Ethereum or Solana wallet address, okay? And that FID is linked to your username, right? So you've got one, your Forecaster identity, who you are, your real or pseudonymous username, your FID, which is linked to and verified by a crypto wallet address, but not the one that you use to pay your $5, okay? Because you could pay by Apple Pay, and that you can presumably, as we said, take this across all the apps built on the Forecaster protocol, but also three, you've got authentication that your messages are actually coming from you and others can trust that. Now, this technical debrief that I've gone into here, again, as we said, is inconsequential to 95% of the users out there. They just don't care. But what it does is it lays a foundation for you to be able to, if you get sick of Warpcast, and you want to go to some other social media app that's been built on the Forecaster protocol, you can go and you can take your followers with you. Right now, if you get sick of Twitter, you can't take your followers with you to Warpcast. You couldn't take them to Instagram. You couldn't take them to Facebook either because they're not transferable across. So all of this value proposition assumes that more will be built on Forecaster, which signs are pointing to the fact that there will be. But, you know, it's still very nascent and it's still very primitive. And a couple of months ago, I got very excited about a project that I was referring to as having the potential to become a Web3 WeChat. With Farcaster, now I'm realizing how naive I was with that tag, right? Because the WeChat is just such a massive ecosystem. It's gigantic. And then if we look at Farcaster right now, I see a little bit of that. WeChat, to me, became very interesting once they expanded, you know, beyond just social media and messaging each other to payments, to other financial services, to government services, to just saying to developers, build it in the WeChat ecosystem, because the benefit there is that you don't need to download another app to your phone. You can use these mini apps all within, mini programs all within WeChat. And I'm thinking, could we get to that similar context with Farcaster? Very small green shoots coming up here. You've got a newsletter app in Paragraph. You've got content with news, podcasts, and videos and Kiwi News, a bunch of utilities, all making it easier to use the Farcaster protocol. It does very much to me feel like the mid-90s when we're messing around with a protocol called HTML, you know, and a protocol called SMTP and for email and documents online. Wonderful. Great. And that we started to see more and more built on top of that. And Web3, and we've got to address that at some other point, because you're very right. Web3, I feel like I need to start explaining to people again. But like a lot of people see, well, I've got an investment strand in DeFi, an investment strand in crypto infrastructure, an investment strand in Web3. To me, it's all Web3, right? But others look at Web3 and say, well, that's the more kind of metaverse-y NFT side of and token gated type stuff and own the internet type, which you're doing anyway in crypto. But listen, I digress. The whole idea here, though, and the point that I wanted to talk to you about, Laura, in a roundabout way, is that going back to identity, which was the whole part of this, if the lowest common denominator in all of this discussion is your identity and being able to keep that identity and move it across from app to app without having it owned by a centralized group, even though Dan Romero is talking about Farcaster as being sufficiently decentralized, you know, it's not all blockchains completely, but if the lowest common denominator in all of this is your identity, does the potential for an online ecosystem here built on Farcaster challenge the sovereign issues of digital identity credentials and digital wallets? Is this a, I live my life online, I do so much on Farcaster, a number of unexpected government services, for example, have started to build on Farcaster for one reason or another. Now, we're not thinking tomorrow or next year. We're thinking 5 to 10 years down the road. And so I'm looking now back at the IDIS framework in the EU, which Mai and I talked about as, all right, that is a centralized entity, government entity issuing digital ID. I don't want to use that to authenticate myself online and all these different sites because privacy is my default, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, are you more likely to trust a sufficiently decentralized protocol to start accumulating a catalog of everything you do online and linking it to your identity rather than a government-issued digital identity that might be centralized? Which,
I mean, if there's only two choices, because I would choose neither, to be honest, to be perfectly honest, I would choose neither. Because I don't want it connected to my, I mean, like, I think that it's safe to say the two of us are like Gen X and we're also very, so it's very like, you know, screw you, man.
Yeah.
You know, fight the man, fight the power and down with the man. So the idea that the man has, can track me across, to be perfectly honest, they probably can now anyway.
That was Mai's point.
Yeah, but they can anyway, and it's probably not that hard, but at least I'd like to have the illusion. I think, and maybe that's the opiate for the masses. You know, you'd like to have the illusion that somewhere, if you're sufficiently clever enough, that you can maybe have some anonymity some places. And the WeChat ecosystem, I mean, being in Asia, not even in China, we still, like here in Thailand, we accept WeChat Pay. We don't accept Apple Pay.
Okay.
There's no Apple Pay in Thailand, but there's WeChat Pay and Alipay for like Alibaba. So there's Alipay, there's WeChat Pay. But there's also, just quickly, a little aside, there's a bit of a backlash here in Asia against these super apps because we've got more. Well, WeChat is basically just China and everywhere that the Chinese diaspora travels with large tourist numbers. So Thailand sees it as beneficial because the tourist numbers are massive. So we have to accept it. And also with it, when you're within China, there's almost zero cash. So you need it. It's purposeful. And the government absolutely controls that. Absolutely, 110%. Nothing goes on there without, you know, their say-so. Over here, we have Line. We've got Grab. And Grab is in a couple of Southeast Asian countries. I'm not sure how many outside of Southeast Asia, but Line is Japan and Thailand for sure, maybe Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia. And Line here, the government agencies are creating Line accounts. And wow, there's Line Pay. And there's, oh, you can contact us through Line. And everyone here is like having a cybersecurity freakout because there's so much information, government information, non-government information, company information. So all your personal information has been leaked about 80 different times from just leaky websites, leaky government services. So for them to say, hey, let's build a WeChat-like ecosystem, well, have we thought about the bad actors? Because I'm pretty sure all of my information has been leaked about 80 different times just through all the stuff I have to do here with government services and whatnot. And Line is not secure. So people here are like, no, we don't want any more super apps because Grab's already starting to be the super app. Same with Line. Like it's got payments, it's got video, it's got, you know, government services. It's hooked up to the transportation system. So your train card, your Revit card is on your Line account. And so people are now, no, I don't, it's too much. It's too much. Let's, doesn't mean you actually want to jump around to 18 different apps, but everything in one, it starts to feel a bit too centralized and too monopolistic. Same with Grab is food, deliveries. You can hire a shopper. You can get a taxi or a motorcycle, things like that. But they're starting their own, you know, they're building more and they would like to be a super app. And that's their goal, to be a super app. So we've got a couple of them over here that seems to be ripe for super apps, but the risk of government oversight or government overstep is also very real. I would probably go with the sufficiently decentralized, but that wouldn't be decentralized either. Because also if you're on Ethereum, I'm like, you're just on Ethereum. Okay. If you're EVM compatible, I suppose we could bridge something on an L2, but what are they even building on? Are they building on mainnet and the gas fees? And then we go down the rabbit hole of all the things going wrong with Ethereum right now.
Is there an element of privacy that you get from the fact that your ID is cryptographically secured?
I suppose. I mean, to do this, the safe way to do it, I guess. And again, none of this, I've made a Warpcast account and none of it is connected to anything to do with my crypto wallet or anything. So how my FID is on Ethereum, I have no idea unless they minted it for me.
Have you got to the point yet where you verify your account using the wallet?
No, email.
Okay. Because I got an email that said you can now verify your account with your wallet.
I got verified through email, so...
So did I. I verified through email, but then you can connect your wallet so that you can then prove that you are you, right? Hmm. So there is, and I don't know how the signing mechanism works, but yes, I did connect my wallet. I authenticated using MetaMask.
Yeah. See, I've not been offered that step or gotten that step. The smart thing to do would be to make a new wallet with nothing in it. Well, maybe some dust for gas or whenever you have to do if you're signing a transaction, but make a new wallet and just go from there. Because again, if you think you're anonymous, but this is the whole thing about being anonymous on the blockchain. You're not. It's the
you're
most
pseudonymous.
Traceable.
It is.
Yeah, it's the most traceable thing ever. So if you connect it to your wallet that you've been using, I mean, why would you do that? Because now everyone can see do you know what I mean? It just doesn't...
Totally. No. And that was Mai's point. So using this EU digital ID framework, this digital wallet that will be progressing over the next few years and being made available to EU citizens, that yes, by all means, I would use that if it meant that I could bring my no claims discount for my auto insurance from Germany to Ireland. And that was part of the digital identity functions that was available using this wallet, or that there was a COVID cert, or that my actual picture identity would be recognized across borders and so on and so forth without carrying my passport around. And that could be authenticated in the same way that when I go now with my going to a rugby match with my kids on Ticketmaster, it is no longer scan. Okay. And even if it was scanning and scanning a QR code, they got this little TikTok thing that moves back and forth across it to make sure that you're not scanning a screen print or a screenshot.
Instead, I actually
just go in with a Ticketmaster app and I just tap my phone and it says, yep, that ticket is recognized because it's in my wallet. So all of that type of stuff is coming to Europe. And that it's basically tap to do things. And that's all you have to do. And I got so excited. I'm like, this has to be wrapped with zero knowledge proofs. And Maya was like, no, it has nothing to do with blockchain. Nothing at all. So
it's just there.
That's servers. The good part of it. The part of it that I would choose not to use is that when I go online right now and I choose to authenticate myself using, say, Google to a website and sign in using Google. Wonderful. I do that a lot.
Yeah.
But if it said sign in using your EU digital ID, that's where I'd be like, nah, maybe not. My point was that as a citizen, one, and two, as Google is a corporation that has some type of responsibility to the government of whatever countries that their users live, that they can get your data anyway. The government can get your data anyway if they ask for it. And I'm like, absolutely fine. And I'm totally cool with that. It's just, I don't want it to be used in any algorithm to then be decided to be to see what's put in front of me and what's suggested in the same way that a Twitter or Facebook algorithm or listening Alexa works today, you know, in your house. So that's where I kind of drew the line. But when I thought about it from a decentralized perspective, and you're right, it's not totally decentralized. It is just sufficiently decentralized that I said, is my ID then, like I said, cryptographically protected? And that I will then have that control and will be able to determine what gets put in front of me and what doesn't get put in front of me because people won't know who I am. But again, that kind of, you know, eliminates the point of having an identity if it's totally pseudonymous. And that's what I think it's going to be on Farcaster. So I'm almost kind of poo-pooing my whole thesis here and saying that, why, yes, in the online utopia, yes, we will have all these apps built on this decentralized protocol called Farcaster or perhaps Lens or others out there like that, that will be mimicking these online ecosystems. But because it's cryptographically controlled, we won't have these leaks of information out there. We won't have my email address and my physical address being shared and being sold off to the black market for different, you know, dark web players to then say, oh, we've got Pete's name and we've got his phone number, but we were missing the physical address that was attached. So we know now based upon him traveling and posting on Twitter that he's traveling or posting on LinkedIn that he's somewhere else in the world, that his house is vulnerable and we're going to go after that. Right. Yeah. So that's what I want to stay away from. But
that's fair. That's fair. That is fair.
There's complications, complications here though. And it's that because I think that it's very interesting how WeChat have done it. And these other apps that you were talking about, like Line and Grab, and that you just start with a very primitive thing that people want to use. Through that, can you build a more concrete foundation around an individual, an identity? You absolutely can. But does that stop me from setting up a second account? Nope. I can go do that pretty easily, can I?
I have another Grab account for my daughter, but it's I pay for it. So I use the payment option so she can get rides to and from school without me doing that. Or if she's really hungry and, you know, we're all busy with work, she can order food if she wants to. I really wish they had a family option for that, but they don't. So she had to make her own account. But when you're talking about the transferability of this ID within the Farcaster ecosystem, this sounds very familiar to me. And this sounds like the promise of what, let's say, Web3 gaming NFTs were supposed to be.
Yep.
And you're supposed to be able to take your assets. You know, I bought this. This is my super guff, right? This is my souped up gun that I played 18 levels on. My HP maxed out by... you know, all of my stats on this are maxed out. And I can then take this NFT because I bought it and move it to any other game. And that didn't work, one, no. because one, nobody wants to build games where there's interoperability. Two, not every game was built on the same chain. It may work a little bit better if you keep everything within the Farcaster ecosystem, but even within the Farcaster ecosystem, that's on ETH, that's on Ethereum. So technically, would anything else built on the Ethereum mainnet be backwards compatible or compatible at all with this FID or no? Because if you're trying to say your ID is transferable, but only within our walled garden, that's still saying centralized ecosystem, right? In a way. Yes, your FID may be sufficiently decentralized. However, you can only use it within our ecosystem. You can't take that anywhere else. You see what I mean?
Yeah. They're going to have to build connectivity across a number of other blockchains. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to totally misanalogize this, but USDC is now available on so many different chains, right? Mm-hmm. And a stablecoin construct is much different than a very basic ID construct. But if you're able to do it with USDC, you're going to be able to do it with an identity contract. What gets built on the Farcaster protocol? Mm-hmm. And all I'm seeing right now are these very basic things around other types of content and media. And it's very early, but I think it's going to be, where can this go? And this frames feature of, is it just a gimmick, or is it something that will actually keep people on Workcast or Paragraph or any of these other apps that are built on top of the protocol? So I think I think where we've gotten to is that, Pete, it's very early. I did this thing yesterday, this slide, and I'll share it with you. And it was to express to the incoming cohort of Techstars Web3 about how my mind works. It was a step-by-step process, and that went from network, right? Which doesn't mean go out and smarmy shake hands at some event. That means talk to the people you know and see how they're doing, like we're doing right now, and maybe record it as a podcast, or just talk about things and learn and get other introductions and that, where you learn more. And it's moving from your network to a learning experience. Okay. Yep. And then when I learn about new things, I then use my imagination. And I use my imagination to think about where this all could go. And then I test it and I do some due diligence around it. And effectively what we're doing right now, Laura, is we're testing it. And then the final step in that is to invest. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know,
You're moving down the funnel.
Imagine, test, and then invest. And so that's effectively what we're doing right now. And where I think we got to with this is that, Pete, it's still early. It's so
super
early.
Early.
My main question coming out of the end of this, which was, all right, what is Dan Romero's long-term strategic vision with this? Mm-hmm. And guess what I used to figure that out? A wonderful tool called Google. And so it pointed me in the direction of this blog post where he says, we want to get to 1 billion users. And I'm like, dude, those 1 billion users are going to need to do a lot more than just social media. There's 350 million people on Twitter today. So we've got a ways to go then. And that I'm nowhere near organizing a debate between you and my Santa Maria. The government issued digital identity versus building up your online credentials in a decentralized way through an ecosystem like this.
Yeah. I use Face ID on my phone, but the way I see digital ID and security working now, everybody scan your face. It absolutely terrifies me. But it kind of got a big ramp up out of COVID, where it's touchless experiences, right? And contactless experiences. And that seems to be the way everything is going now. And I'll be honest, I loathe it. I don't want to scan my face for everything. I don't want this app to know everything about me. And then you're getting into KYC AML, which, you know, there are inevitabilities in some ways. But I think these guys, if they want to onboard a billion users, not only are they going to have more for them to do, But unless you're going to run the bot firm that is Twitter, you may have to have a bit more of a rigorous onboarding than, hey, pay $5.
And that's why I say Warpcast is just their go-to-market strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Romero talked about, the natural first instinct was to attract as many users as possible. But then they thought, wait a second, we have to attract developers as well. And that's where mm-hmm. Frames came from. So I think it's early days. Like I said, it's primitive. It feels like the 90s with these other protocols that we now use without even referring to them, email and something called a web page. And they've been used for tons of other things as well. So yeah, I think.
Well, also, how long can you keep it running? And maybe the computational power isn't as expensive to need server farms.
Mm.
But how long can you keep it running without advertisers?
You're going to need them.
I mean, that's the problem that Elon's running into is his advertisers. And that's why premium is being pushed so hard. And that's why you're seeing so many bot farms is because they're willing to pay. That's why everybody has these awful lady bots in their replies to everything where varied parts are in bio. And everyone's getting that in our timelines now. So can he do it without advertising? Can they do it without advertising? Not with a billion people. No. Mm-mm.
No.
So I don't see it. I don't see a bad thing. I would love to get more into it. That was just, it was a rough onboarding experience. And if my onboarding experience is, let's say, an average user experience, you're not going to get the people who won't go that far to find a solution to actually get on. And I almost got scammed. I caught a scam last night because there's a website that just misspells Warpcaster a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it says connect wallet. And I went, oh, cool. Okay, I can do it. And then I went, wait, hold on.
Yep.
Because none of the other wallets were loading. And I went, huh, I don't have a Coinbase wallet because I don't have a Coinbase account. And I went, that's weird. And then I looked up at the URL and I went, that's spelt wrong. Oh.
Yeah.
I've been
done by that before.
Nice try. Yeah. So I just got out of that. But that was literally number two on the search result. Is a scam website trying to get you to connect your wallet. And I'm so happy to see Connect Wallet. So I figured I could make an account. Okay. No. So it's, people are already clicking into this a little bit. But I would be excited to check it out a bit more. My Blue Sky experience didn't pan out. I still mm-hmm. have an account over there, but nobody's over there. Everyone's still on Twitter.
Yeah. And there's only 100.
They're not on Twitter.
I know. There's only 130,000 users on Warpcast right now, roughly around that. And just hearing some of the big names in crypto that had been on Twitter and are still on Twitter mm-hmm. and referring to it as x.com, like Nick Carter Matt Walsh from, I can't do that yet. From Castle Island Ventures. And there was this whole hullabaloo around Nick Carter not being able to get his user credentials back because he had lost them. And so what he ended up doing was, I think Dan Romero ended up finding a way that for the good of the ecosystem was able to reinstate him. Okay. So, but you got to imagine, because I'm thinking about it myself, what am I going to post on Warpcast?
Yeah.
I'm going to just copy what I'm posting on Twitter and bring it over.
It's just amplification at this. Right now, somebody, because we were looking into this actually as, because I'm, as a CMO, you have to look at your socials and what your amplification channels are and what your social channels are. Then we got to be on Farmcaster. And then I looked into it. I mean, do we really need to be on Farmcaster right now? And it was, it's good to grab like any social platform, good to grab your handle. But as an amplification tool, it doesn't have the reach right now to actually pull focus or any type of, let's say, time and effort to put into custom posts or anything like that. So, go ahead, play around, but it's not a priority and it's not a good enough amplification tool because there's not enough people on it. Which, this is an if too, because I'll say crypto Twitter is its own special little universe. Not for the faint of heart whatsoever, mm-hmm. but even if all of crypto Twitter goes over there, it's still not enough. So the appeal has to be much wider.
It does. Wider. It does. And where it's going to start is that, okay, like I said, very basic usage right now across a social media channel, across a newsletter, across a few different other types of apps. And it will be, it's just going to be a, they need to follow a user growth track that tons of other Web2 companies have been down before. And they will be able to grow the users from 130,000 to a million, say. I'm sure they will.
Yeah, absolutely.
By having these other apps. And okay, there if there are people that are building purely in Web3, where you've got a social media channel that you use for amplification, you've got a newsletter that you post and produce, and you've got a couple other utilities that you use, and you see a need to, oh, great, I can have one user ID across all of this that is linked, then okay, you'll get some growth there. But it's going to be very crypto native still, because that's a very small community compared to the rest of the world that are using social media platforms. And it could go in the direction of opening up to a debate of, you know, private ID versus public ID. But it's going to be one to watch for the long term. And I feel like I say that a lot because I'm watching a lot of things right now. But it's
well, but it could. And it sounds like I've been horribly negative on it, and I don't mean to be. It just, I'm a bit sore because it took so long to get on there. I almost got scammed when I, you know, right before I did get on there. And the only, like, there's no real step-by-step explainer except for connect your wallet. I'm like, that's great. How? Because I can't even get to the button because the button is grayed out and I can't use it. So, you know, and no notification, even on, you know, I went on Twitter to look at their account, the Forecaster account, and I don't think Warpcast even has one, or it had one, it's not active, or the last tweet was like a year ago.
Okay.
So there's no information. There's no information on Reddit. There's no information on outages. So yeah, like the top of the funnel isn't there yet. Yep. If you get what I mean? It's still very niche. So way more top of the funnel work needs to be done there.
Yeah.
Not just awareness.
And it needs to, it almost needs to be that the happiest user of the Farcaster protocol will be the most unconscious user of the Farcaster protocol, because they don't know that they're using it. And I was thinking about this in the context of, hey, do you, because you use AWS or Azure, do you get ads? No, you don't get ads, but everybody just uses, they're not technically protocols, they're cloud services, but it's a base layer and a foundational layer that everybody just uses. And you don't really think about the fact that, well, we're probably plugged into an AWS server right now for having this conversation that we're recording right now, but that it, and it needs to get to that level of unconsciousness in terms of the use of Farcaster protocol without us actually worrying about the fact that we will have ads put in our face by the different apps that are building on top of it. And we'll know that because I've read this newsletter on the Paragraph app, that I'm likely to post something about that content on Warpcast. And that perhaps I'll get a reminder when I'm on the Warpcast app that, hey, you liked this post over here on Paragraph. Why don't you share it on Warpcast? I'm like, leave me alone. You know, I don't want
that.
So, all right. Well, listen, Laura, we've successfully poo-pooed my thesis around this. Maybe not poo-pooed it, but just kick the can down the road. And, and that's what I like to do here, in that take this risk of trying to pick something apart on air.
See how it rattles out. Yeah.
So thank you. And listen, enjoy your trip. And I may delete this out so people, but people don't know your address. So they're not going to be able to know that your home is vulnerable while you're away. So
yeah, no, nobody knows. Actually, nobody knows my address. So that's okay. And my husband's still home. So it's fine. It's only two of us going.
All right.
It's always two of us going.
Well, wonderful. And yeah, enjoy Taylor Swift.
Oh, I can't wait. And well, this is going to come out after we go anyway. I didn't tell Kaede that I traded our nosebleed seats in for floor VIP tickets. So.
Ooh, you are a good mother.
She has no idea.
That's so awesome.
Not tomorrow, but Friday when we walk into the venue, she's going to be pretty shocked, I would say.
She will scream.
She'll lose it. She'll lose it. And it was only like really a couple $100 difference. Because I know for a fact I overpaid for those tickets because I had to get it on a reseller. But
well, just
and the brakes. Way to go, Ticketmaster. Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you, Laura.
No, no worries. No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
That does it for this week, folks. You can learn more about the topics we covered in the show notes on our website, moneyneversleeps.ie. Thanks to Laura Walsh for the awesome insight she shared and co-hosting this episode with me. We'll do a deeper dive into the output of this conversation in our Money Never Sleeps newsletter on Substack, so check that out on moneyneversleeps.substack.com and subscribe. If you like what you heard, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify as it helps others to find the show. Thanks to Conan Brophy from CreateSound for mixing and editing this episode. As for me, I'm an early-stage startup investor focused on where fintech meets crypto and crypto meets Web3, and I lead the Techstars Web3 Accelerator. There are plenty of links in the show notes on moneyneversleeps.ie on how to get in touch with us, so don't hesitate to reach out. Finally, till next time, thanks for listening. See ya!